morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Happy post-4th of July. Fireworks were good? Any rangers at Edgewater?
They were busy.
Roll call, please.
Bruce Springer.
Here.
Debbie Barry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
So this is the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The motion to approve minutes for June 15th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And, speaking to the news.
We're ready to go, Commissioner.
Wow. That's quick.
Good morning, everyone. First action item, we have the proposed 2018 tax budget. It falls on the top portion of page one.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is the adjustment to petty cash. This is goes on periodically throughout the year as our operations ebb and flow. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of, it's still going, we've got a lot of, six.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Next action item we have is the authorization of the land purchase. This is the Peterson property in the North Chagrin Reservation. This is very near the upper 40. This has been recognized as a very highly sensitive ecosystem. We have worked with the family on a lot split. There is oil and gas well concern in the home. There is actually two, we believe, contingent offers on the house. And so we're working with them to try to preserve the portion that really inserts itself into the reservation. We think we found a very good way of achieving the preservation of the 10.5 acres along this, as well as them keeping some property value in the area as well. And so that recommended action, if there are no questions, falls on the side.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We'll move into, this is a authorization of land acquisition from the Conservation Fund. This was a property that we were notified by our park manager about, and about the same time, the Conservation Fund at Sexton called and asked if we would be interested in the preservation of this. The Conservation Fund has since done work to get the property under contract. It's just less than an acre of land, and we are bringing that to the board for the acceptance of a donation fee. We would have a little bit of cost in cost share for what we believe would be the demolition of and kind of the returning of the property, but it's a very nice buffer right at the edge of the Acacia Reservation off of Richmond Road.
What's on that property?
It's a older homestead of lesser value.
That no one is in.
I think there were some people that were still living in it. That is my impression. But they wanted to sell.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is a contract amendment for Wildwood Green Infrastructure Project. Sean will just give us a quick background on this, and we'll move into the action item.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
So what we have before you today is the next step in our design build process for improvements at the Wildwood parking lot. This is a Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funded and also Sewer District funded project. We put those funds together and we have just over $300,000 to improve this parking lot. So since March, we've been working with the F-Buddy and OHM team to design the best fit for these four bioretention cells in the parking area. And what we're bringing before you today is a guaranteed maximum price of approximately $285,000. Which includes improvements in all four of these bioretention areas, pavement removal, new boardwalks and new sidewalks through the areas that's connecting those in the parking lot to the facilities and the main building on site.
The main part of the parking lot is staying though, or are you using the entire thing?
The main part of the parking lot is staying. We are removing a few spaces to open it up and provide some more permeable areas, but in essence, the alignment of the spaces and the size of the lot will same as it is today.
Thank you.
Really good opportunity to help again increase the water quality value and the other enhancements that we're continuing to do out there. I mean, this is a partnership actually with the city of Cleveland. It was really kind of a work through with them as well, so we're very pleased to bring this improvement. We'll also be talking about the Wolf improvement areas as well.
It's on the end to practice what you're preaching.
Recommended action is on page 9.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is the agreement for the ratification of the Teamsters Local Union 507. Our teams have worked very diligently with union leadership for the Teamsters, and we do have an approval rating of Harold over 70%. 70% by the?
Yes, granted bond 70%.
And a couple of the nuances, the first year 275, 25, and 2.25. We also maintain the healthcare contributions, and then we also, for the very first time in our history of union contracts, we actually have a performance, an employee performance-based bonus structure starting in 2019. And I'd like to give Harold and his team a round of applause.
Yeah, that's
we've got a few more unions that we're still working with, and we hope to bring those to board here in the very near future. Recommended action is on page 10.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
The next is the contract termination of United Cerebral Palsy. This is unfortunately a very unique set of circumstances that has happened with their funding mechanism, their supported employment site. We have had staff members here for many, many years. We were able to actually retain four of these individuals. Two of them had actually transitioned out into other jobs along the way. This was all relative to their situational state funding and how their programs were set up through United Cerebral Palsy. They were getting funding and then working through, and then we were working through contracts, but they have since lost that level of state funding, and so they're looking at how their model works in the future, but we were still able to retain the employees that were working for us here in the Park District. But it's part of the process that we had to end up terminating the contract with UCP and the Oakley Partners.
But we do still have the employees.
We do still have the employees.
Yeah, they're a different type of structure.
Yeah, and they're not our employees, essentially.
That's great. That's the structure. That's terrific.
Yep. Recommended action is on page 11.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Tabulation of awards and bids. We have Group Zoo Audio Visual, which is coming up, and it's for a 3-year period of time. We have our asphalt pavement project improvements in Brecksville and Big Creek reservations, and then we have Cisco Umbrella and some routers and licenses. Recommended actions on page 12.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Approval of payroll and vouchers.
For commissioners, for your approval, resolution 1706-083. All of the following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments?
Marty? Please. Marty. The last court to withdraw a large crowd to enter our equal without additional promotion. Excessive visitors could easily trigger accidents or road rage. The high numbers imply success, and they just invite mob behavior from piles of trash, etc. Adding alcohol does not foster mob behavior. It was so lucky the kid who was shot escaped with minor injuries. You can't rely on luck. The centennial party could turn from celebration to tragedy so easily. Better keep numbers manageable and have a successful, uneventful event. Speaking of Metro Parks promotion, it appears Metro Parks employees using Metro Parks equipment and services posted on Metro Parks Twitter account, giving a shout out to local restaurants and providing links. Visit some at Detroit Shoreway's new spots before or after the beach. Listen to some. According to the Ohio Ethics Commission, Public-Private Partnerships, Section 7A, a public official should avoid taking any action that endorses or appears to endorse any private corporations or organization. I finally obtained the water taxi expenses, even without the boat and its costs. $2.3 million was poured into docks and facilities, with more to come. The promised donations may or may not cover the operating costs for this year. If there are millions to spare for such a specialized downtown perk, then you should be able to repair the Hinkley Dam without asking for a loan. That dam has functioned for far longer and with less maintenance than the water taxi, and serves far more residents in a way appropriate to a park system. choice before you've taken care of needed repairs. Downtown is not only soaking up the money, it has drawn attention and staffing away from the historic park, the 100th centennial you are celebrating. Bay Village citizens complaining about trash and bad behavior at Huntington Park were apparently told that the limited ranger coverage is due to staffing needs at Edgewater. Quite a put down for suburbs that have supported your letters all these years. Weekly concerts don't sub for daily coverage. Good to see that the meeting archives have been restored to the website. They should never have been removed. Now you are going to study other website issues. Why hire another consultant considering what you now have was recommended by one? Just ask those who go to the website or phone in with frustrations where the problems are and fix them. These are merely some of the areas that cry out for attention. As rapidly as money is doled out, so many problems remain. When the Brecksville Connector was announced, it was decided to take over the longtime bridle path. It was assured the new bridle path would be available in March before the old one was closed. Another town's missed. You are building up large numbers of frustrated visitors, folks who have been using and supporting Cleveland Metro Parks for years. They are more loyal and more important than the happy hour crowd you seem to be catering to. You ignore them at your peril. Thank you.
If I could ask Marty to quantify the large number of frustrated visitors or guests, I can tell you that I receive very, very few comments across my desk. And across the staff, we hear very few of those. So if there's a way for her to quantify defining what large means, I would very much appreciate that.
Do we have a way of looking at calls that come in, both complimentary and calls that come in suggesting that, to sort of quantify what that would be? I mean, how does someone complain to the Metro Park?
There's a variety of different ways. I mean, through the front desk, I think, is one of the main areas. We also have an email type system. But across the board, I mean, there aren't that many that actually come in. And most times after having conversation with, you know, when you cherry pick facts across the board, you know, whether it's ranger coverage, you know, which in the history of the Rangers, we continue to move Rangers, you know, based on demands and things that are going on for special events. So, you know, once that resident, we found out, we actually talked to the resident and actually explained what we were doing and how we were doing and how we were moving. And everything went very well. We talked with the mayor of the municipality. So I think, again, the cherry pick facts across the board is a little bit disingenuous to the board of park commissioners here. But having said that, you know, quantifying, you know, what large means, I think would be very helpful for us.
Yeah, it would be helpful to be able, like the clinic has a very methodical way of appraising, looking at what comes in for each doctor. And you can go on the webpage and you can find out Dr. Klein, how many people had a good experience, how many people had a bad experience. And I think here it would be nice to have some sort of way of quantifying. But Marty, I think one thing is interesting. The park is now, the park started out with, you know, people being in a congested city, very crowded, a lot of pollution. And there was a ring around that was the central part of the park, except for Edgewater, which, you know, we should remember that the early beach house had 600 rooms in it. I mean, this is a minimalist compared to what it used to be. So now we have a park that is within the city, so it's a whole different breed of cat. And of course, you can't, you know, acquiring land, as you see, you don't get land for $100 an acre anymore. It's up in the stratosphere. So you know, we are a different park, and we're a better park, and we serve many more people than we did in the early years, when you had to take a trip out to the way out to the country to enjoy the park. So I think it's a blend, but I love the reason I'm on this board is I love nature and I love walks in the woods. But I completely understand the fact that you've got to be in tune with modern times. I think Edgewater is a wonderful example of a success.
Any other comments? Information?
We will move into the information. We have with us two employee guests that will be introduced, Mario Martinez and Brandon Meyerson. Rick, you're up.
Morning.
Morning.
I'm Rick Fitch. I'm the park manager at Rocky River. I'd like to introduce Mario Martinez. He's worked for me as grounds maintenance employee for about 7 months. Previously, Mario came from the West Lakefront. He was a seasonal there. Before that, he worked for a landscaper. And about 8 years ago was when Mario actually came to the United States. He's originally from Paraguay.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to work organization. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good morning, James Lester, forestry manager. Brandon Myers. He's been with the Metro Parks over in forestry since October of 2016. Prior to that, he was over at OEC as a seasonal house maintenance guy. He has his own landscape company. Prior to that, he worked for 6 years in various landscape companies. And he just recently completed a CDL class. Brandon Myers.
Morning. I just want to thank everyone. Feel blessed and grateful to call the outdoors my office. Enjoy just being outside every day and working here fits the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Welcome. The next information item we have is the advances in animal training. Michael Murray is with us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mike Murray, as it was pointed out, and I oversee two sections of the park, including the first view. I oversee Wilderness Trek and Australian Adventure, but the third hat that I wear that I truly love because I get to work in all areas of the park is I oversee our enrichment and training program at the zoo. And we've made a lot of headway in the last 4 years, and that's what I want to talk to you about here today, because Cleveland Metro Park Zoo is truly becoming a leader in effective behavior management of animals. And we'll talk a little bit about what that means. But first, it's our centennial, so let's take a little trip back down memory lane. One of those pictures is not ours, but historically, we managed animals very differently than how we do now. We housed animals in a menagerie-type setting. So this is a bear that actually did live at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. You see our old logo there on the photo. And that enclosure doesn't have a lot of choice for that animal, not a lot of space, and it was really designed for visitors to just see a lot of different animals at once. The other way that was different is how we interact with animals. So on the right is a picture of an elephant seal that lived at the Philadelphia Zoo about 80 years ago. And really, keepers just went in to feed the animal. There wasn't a lot of structured interaction at all. It was pretty much go in, get it fed, however that happened, and then get out.
Move quickly.
And today, both in how we design habitats and how we interact with animals is very, very different. We are giving animals choice and control over every facet of their lives. So, as many of you know, we opened up a beautiful new habitat for our tigers last year, Roseburg Tiger Passage. And that habitat was designed with nothing but tigers in mind. So there's lots of choices, large amounts of natural space for them to be the tigers that they are. In addition to that, we structure our interactions, our keepers structure our interactions with animals in terms of training sessions. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit more about today. So we train our keepers. We invest heavily in their skill set and how to work with animals. And that process happens every day. We train them. But also, after they're trained, we go through a process of setting goals for training. So what gets trained. And we set goals mainly for veterinary purposes. So we'll do blood draws, ultrasounds, injections, get weights on animals. And all of those processes are very carefully planned, and then after they're implemented, everything's documented and evaluated, much like our other processes in the zoo. These are our two grizzly bears, Cody and Cooper, when they first got here. This is a few years old now. And they're learning one of the first behaviors that animals learn, and that's to target. So the first thing we want animals to learn is that keepers are a positive presence. So they come over and are trained to just touch their nose to these targets, and they get heavily rewarded. And that helps build the relationship with the keepers. And from there, we can train other behaviors. But how do we train animals? So we only use positive reinforcement here at Cleveland Mountain Park Zoo, which means that we work with animals on a reward system. So this is our female tiger, Dasha, and our keeper, Allison. And Allison has asked Dasha to present her paw, and so she holds up her paw. And so Allison can get a great look at that. And just in return, she gets a very small piece of meat for that. And we ask for that every day. We like to see our animals up close and see how they're doing. And so training different body part presentations is really important. From there, we can kind of move on to more complex behaviors. So training is really important because it helps us as curators and keepers, but also our vet staff and conservation and science staff get samples and diagnostics that they need. So this is us doing an ultrasound on a female sea lion. She's not pregnant, but the behavior is there. And the fact that we can do this voluntarily takes the stress out of it. So we don't have to use anesthesia to get an ultrasound or a blood sample or give vaccinations or get a weight. That's something that is part of their daily routine. And they get food for it, and they're really eager to participate. So really, it's like the animals are participating in their own health care, and they're pretty eager to do so. Some of our early projects in our training program were our elephants, big cats like lions and tigers and cheetahs, and our black rhinos. We started just by first asking for different body positions to check out how the animal's doing, and then we moved up to more complex behaviors like this tiger blood draw that you see here. So the keeper, Amy, on the right, she's a fantastic tiger trainer, and she's asked Dasha to come over, lay down, and that red thing is actually a scale, so we also get weights on her whenever we need to. It's about every week. And then our vet tech, Kevin, is right there, and there's a small door that has a lock on it, and you see a metal hook laying on the floor, so he's taken that hook, and we can get the tail out. There's a huge blood vessel in that tail, and that's how we draw blood from a tiger. And we can do that as often as we need to, and we can monitor Dasha's blood values at any time we want without using anesthesia. And just like that paw presentation, she just gets a small piece of meat as a reinforcement. Some of our more groundbreaking stuff that we've done here at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo is the stuff that we've done with great apes. As many of you know, some of our top gorilla researchers in the world work right here in Cleveland. And one of the things that we are proud of is that we're the only zoo in the United States that has a reliable blood draw behavior on a male silverback gorilla, which is pretty profound to say. And we presented this paper at a national gorilla conference last year in Mexico. And this is keeper Julie Good and vet tech Angel Mitchell doing that blood draw on Makolo right here, kind of in his forearm. We have a similar behavior with our orangutans as well, and both are very, very challenging behaviors. If you want to go ahead and play this video. So the other thing we're dedicated to is studying great ape heart health. So Makolo is a silverback gorilla, and he is living with heart disease, and that is something that we are tackling head on. Our vet team and our conservation and science team are dedicated to researching gorilla heart disease. And so we have trained Makolo for voluntary heart ultrasounds. And this really serves two different purposes. The first and foremost, it's for Makolo. We want to make sure that we can monitor his heart and make sure that it stays as healthy as possible. So we trained him to station right next to the mesh, and we can stick the ultrasound wand right against his chest to get that image of the heart. And beyond Makolo's, we're learning a lot about gorilla heart images and heart disease through this process. And you see the images there, which are pretty amazing. And we can share that with our colleagues around the world so we can understand gorilla heart disease even more so we can prevent it from even happening. And Makolo does this, the blood draws and the ultrasounds, just for a few green beans, some raw green beans. So, you know, we want to make sure his heart healthy, and we found that it's pretty reinforcing just to have some green beans. And he gets his blood drawn and ultrasounds done, and he gets weights. I don't know if I would want green beans for getting my blood drawn, so it's pretty amazing what our keepers and our vet techs are able to do. It's really amazing.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
Have you, over the period you've been doing this with Michaela, have you noticed any improvement in her cardiovascular system? Because you're actually treating her through diet, right?
Correct. And I am not the dietitian in the room.
It's he, yes.
But I do know from our vet staff and our conservation and science staff that we're able to monitor it very closely. And he's doing as well as he can.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's through this voluntary monitoring of veterinary.
So what we have been able to diagnose is lower glucose to insulin ratios, lower markers of inflammation. We're not going to cure the heart disease. We've probably kept it at bay, but I don't have anything to prove that. We've been able to monitor it, and you know, with age, it's going to continue to get worse at some level. But whether it would have been significantly worse not on this diet, I can't say for sure. But we have seen other measures of improved health. Better weights, like I said, the blood values, those sorts of things have improved with the diet.
And this is a one-off. There are no other animals that we can compare and contrast.
Well, we're building partnerships with other zoos as zoos
to develop
invest
that.
In this. This diet costs more. It's cheaper to buy a bag of bagged food and put them on that. So as zoos come onto the diet, we're building a database of other animals.
Yeah.
The real big test will be, you know, eventually we want to be able to bring in a young group of animals and have them grow up on this diet. We've basically given senior citizens a diet change. What we'd like to do is have them grow up on this diet and see what these animals look like. And that's a 20, 30 year event horizon to figure out what that is.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Based on our training, just to complement what he said, is a lot of people are calling us now and asking Cleveland, you know, how can we help our gorillas at our facility, both in training and diet and vet care? So it's all kind of one big package.
It's cutting edge.
Very much so. Along those same lines, it's cutting edge. We have four species of bear that live here. It's kind of hard to see, but this is a sloth bear. And she's also she's getting her blood drawn. And we're the only zoo in the country, once again, to have reliable blood draw behavior on sloth bears. So very similar to gorillas, we're getting phone calls all the time of how can we better take care of our sloth bears. We also have voluntary blood draw behaviors on our other species as well.
Do we have special equipment that no one else has? I mean, where's that coming from if no one else is really doing it?
Really good question. So the equipment is really pretty simple. It's the stainless steel mesh sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some really talented welders here. But really, it's not equipment. It's those two people that you're seeing in the photo. We have an incredible staff that works with these animals, and our vet techs are incredibly skilled in finding the blood vessel.
So they're figuring out the way that we need to be able to reach the animal physically. I mean, what...
Correct.
So
keepers are finding what's motivating, you know,
yeah.
to these animals, which a sloth bear is working for a little bit of honey water, which is about 95% water and just like a few drops of honey. And then our technicians are really skilled at finding those veins, which are traditionally really hard to find. So with gorillas and bears, it's really groundbreaking stuff that's happening right here in Cleveland. And this was also published this year at a conference on animal training, an international conference on animal training. So we're pretty proud of our bear program too. Not everything's as recognizable and charismatic like gorillas and tigers and bears. Our onagers are really special to us. They're an endangered equid species that we have here at the zoo. There's only about 450 of these guys in the entire world, so we're pretty fortunate to have three here right in Cleveland. And if you want to play this video, they get a vaccination every year. And so we trained them to line up right against the mesh. And she's just getting a few pieces of apple. She knows what's coming, you can see it in her tail. Because she's been through this before. And she obviously reacted to that, but she could have walked away at any point from that procedure. There's she had access to multiple other spaces that she could have walked to, but she wanted to hang out with Amy, who's a great trainer, and just a few small pieces of apple was really reinforcing. So we could get those really, really important vaccines into her. Last one, if you want to go ahead and start this video. So we have two gharials in the rainforest, which are a reptile species, a crocodilian species. And we have two females that arrived here when they were pretty young. As gharials get older, females especially, they can become pretty aggressive towards one another. And when they're feeding, this is a GoPro video. So when they're feeding our gharials, we want to make sure that there's no competition for food. And so what we're doing now is we're feeding our two gharials, And our talented keeper staff in the rainforest have trained them to eat at their own stations so that there's no food competition. So she knows when that target pole taps that she's trained to come out and target to that target pole, just like those grizzly bears were in their own way. This is how a gharial targets. And she gets reinforced with fish for touching that. And this is the more dominant one. She was the first one to come out. And so Christy, who's wearing the GoPro, has trained her to come over.
Good girl.
And not until she's all the way over will that second female come out and be comfortable eating from Scott. So reptiles move a little bit slower than otters. So.
Target.
And gharials hunt by swiping their snout from side to side. So you see that kind of swiping behavior, and that's a very natural thing for gharials. That's how they eat. So there's the second one that Scott's starting to work on, but then Jasmine's got to come over here because we want to make sure that both of them have as much opportunities to feed as possible.
And this happens every day?
Yes, yeah, we train every day. What we ask them to do might change, but with feeding gharial, we want to avoid any sort of food competition as possible.
How big are those? Large.
A few hundred pounds.
Could they be dangerous?
They're mainly fish eaters. So that's a really good question too. So with this process, we can also get weights on our gharial. Formerly, with a lot of reptiles, you used to have to use hand restraint to weigh them. And so we're avoiding a really stressful situation for everybody, both keepers and reptiles. So with this, we can just target train them, and they can stand on a scale so we can get weights, or we can feed them, and it's a really low-stress situation. So it's a pretty amazing video. It's not all just the large mammals. The process of training through positive reinforcement really stretches across all animals in the animal kingdom. The last thing I want to talk a little bit about is just a huge shout out to our staff. So a lot of these accomplishments happened very recently, within the last 4 years. Our staff is a really dedicated staff. They are highly skilled. They want to do this, to do these procedures, and they enjoy it. And we've invested a lot into our training program here at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, and our staff has really risen to that new focus on what we're doing. So the next time you see a zookeeper, just tell them that you're doing a wonderful job, because the care of our animals has improved dramatically because of the work that they do. And we're able to do a lot of stuff that we weren't able to do before, like getting weights and blood draws and doing injections like that before they start. So, do you guys have any questions?
That was great.
Thank you.
The next information briefing item we have is a centennial moment. We continue to get to our 100-year anniversary here this month. An update on the history of the Stinchcombe Ruff Memorial, the B. Williams Memorial Woods, and the Harriet Keeler Memorial Woods. Carl?
Good morning. As a naturalist, you learn that if you follow animals, you're done. So I thought I'd bring family photos, and since we're in centennial, we have 100 years worth of family stuff here. And it really is like a family. It's been projects going on for a few years now. These three areas, I'd like to highlight some of the history of it, as well as what's happening up there. In Brecksville, the Harry Keeler Memorial Woods, 1921-22, Harry Keeler was a school teacher in Cleveland, the first female superintendent of the city of Cleveland schools, and as well as an author. And she was so loved by her students and the people that she taught that when she passed away in 1921, they wanted to set aside an area that could be remembered. Brecksville had just gotten its first parcel of property in 1920. So this was kind of a new territory, and they proposed setting aside 300 plus acres in Brecksville Reservation. And it is still there today, encompassing the area around Nature Center, Meadows Picnic Area, and so on. And in 1989, the board rededicated 300 almost 400 acres of this land that's set aside for education and nature study areas. Harry Keeler Shelter, which is right across the street. I asked Judy, I said, so Judy, why don't you change the name to Harry Keeler? We're not sure what it was. It was just called a shelter. Back in 1928, it is the oldest shelter in Cleveland Metro Parks. The kit actually came from Wisconsin and was built by our workers back then. You can see it's just the front part there. In the next slide, the back portion is on, this is from 1939, but 1937, the WPA, Works Progress Administration folks, actually added that on there. And if you look at it today, it's doing well. We've replaced the shingles on there, upgraded the lighting. Back in 1989, there was added you can't see it, but there's a accessible ramp there that a couple of our workers actually cut the stone from the creek bed, brought it up, dropped some of the oak trees there and replaced some of the poles, and it really almost looks like it did years ago. It's in wonderful shape. And then the other part, the big part of Brecksville, is Trailside Museum. Opened in 1939, it just celebrated its 78th anniversary on June 11th. It is on the National Register of Historic Places. This is the only remaining Trailside Museum of our original three, the first two having burned down. And then this one is working. Also, the new center broke ground, the programming center nearby there, which will reflect that same architecture. So Brecksville's looking good. From there, we're going to move up to, I'm not going to move at all here. A.B. Williams Memorial Woods in North Chagrin Reservation. 1930, we didn't have a naturalist park, an education park. William Stinchcomb said, hey, we've got this wonderful land that we're acquiring. We have 9,000 plus acres. We need to share it with people. What's out there? Why is it important? So we partnered with the Cleveland Museum of Natural History for educational services. Arthur B. Williams was our first contracted naturalist. He was 58 years old, done with one career.
As an attorney.
Family's hard to
take that.
So he decided he didn't like that anymore. he decided to go into
educate him off of the outdoors.
So he went back and got his doctorate degree and actually studied the woods in North Chagrin Reservation. I'm amazed that somebody wants to start a career like that and just get into something. And it's not like, hey, there's tons of these things out there. This is relatively new for him to do something like that. In 1931, the North Chagrin Trailside opened. The floor plans, basically, the original structure, it's 18 by 31 foot structure. It was one of the first trailside museums in the country. Not, sorry to say it's not the first, but it's one of the first, and the first in Ohio, in the region, to be used for educational purposes. It was added on to later on, excuse me. Then, unfortunately, in 1987, lightning strike outside on a transformer sent a spark inside and blew up the building, and it is gone. And when we walked out there, all you saw was woods. And if you didn't know that this was the first place, you'd walk right past the beginning of what we did. So what we've done is we've opened that up and put in the foundation. We found where the foundation was. We put in a replica of the foundation of the first trail site, where now the trail goes through to some exhibits and back out into the woods in the Sylvan Trail there. That is going to be dedicated tomorrow for the media day. It's tomorrow. Jacqueline is working on coordinating that. And on Saturday morning, we will have a public program with You'll get to meet William Stinchcomb, maybe Williams, and a few other characters along the way. But you get to see this amazing stuff. I wish I could show you more, but you got to come out and see it. However, there is a few more things that we want to show you. A.B. Williams retired in 1950 after serving 20 years. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1951, and the woods, 65 acres of the woods, was dedicated to his memory in 1953. There is a large rock there. He is not buried there. That's the biggest question. It's been cleaned up, opened up, some signage in that area. I do want to give you a little hint. Ralph's crew, Jim Rostrom and all the guys, they have redone the trails on the Sylvan Loop Trail, which is the historic trail out there, put in a few overlooks. Absolutely fascinating with the work they've been doing. And at the same time, the natural resources, and it's a little tough to see, but it's a restoration area. So they've taken out some of the trails that were actually impeding the root systems of these large trees and restored. You can't even tell there's a trail there. They're that good at what they do. And they've moved the trails into areas that still take you by large trees, but they help protect the resource. So on Saturday, Friday and Saturday, those that come out, we get a chance to walk this half mile trail. It's fascinating. The trees are huge.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing area. Commissioner, you believe you're going to be there, right?
Yes. Yes.
So from A.B. Williams Memorial Woods, we go to Stinchcomb Grove Memorial in Rocky River Reservation, overlooking the first 3.4 acres of our acquisition of land. William Stinchcomb, after many years of service with us, you know, his original idea, I mean, if you look at it, we started in 1917. He retired in 1957. His ideas were well before that even. The memorial that was up there unveiled 1958. Really, they just had a ceremony. He had suffered a stroke, was unable to attend. His family members did attend. They did an unveiling ceremony, and the memorial was actually finished in 59. This is a memorial last fall where we had to remove the stone structure. It was falling in. We removed it, removed everything, basically, except for the monument there. Lowered that hillside. The construction crews, Rick's crews, have done an amazing job. That was the look of it a few months ago. And you can see everything's lowered. There is a little surprise back here. Rick and Jerry have planted 6 different trees, one for each of our executive directors. So a little symbolism back in there. It's just a fascinating place. You'll find Stinchcomb quote, which is on the wall over to this side on the right here. And then this is a clay model that Joe Lenny did, William Stinchcomb. And we have sent it out to be bronzed, and we'll go back up and fill in this little hole here. They used to have a granite likeness of Stinchcomb that if the sun wasn't right, you couldn't tell there was anything on there. And if the sun was wrong, it looked like a real evil person. So we kind of brightened it up a little bit, and we're going to add some stuff. On July 19th at the Stinchcomb Concert Series, we're going to rededicate this. I know we've got responses from the Stinchcomb and Grove family members are going to be there, as well as the Kiwanis members who have donated some funds to this, Stinchcomb being a Kiwanis member himself. You don't want to mention that when you're at a Rotary meeting, because they don't like that too much. Oops, I slipped. The other part of the memorial is Harold Grove. He is our second director. When people ask, why is it important? Well, just like John Adams is important to George Washington in the beginning of our country, the second director comes in and carries on that vision. If Grove comes in and changes everything, who knows what we would look like today. So they really worked together for over 50 years to lead our organization to where it is. The old Grove Memorial was this, we walked up and there was a overlook deck right behind it that was looking into the trees. I know Rick and his crew had a hard time keeping up with that because of vandalism and so on. So we removed the deck, as you can see there. And we said, you know, what are we going to do here? We've cleaned it up. This path, again, I'm not showing you the whole thing, because this path actually leads up to a giant leaf mat cut out in the trail that you guys see. It's, you know, the idea was to be able to see it from an airplane. Well, in order to see it from where the airplanes fly, that we would have to make that thing gigantic. So we made it big enough to where it's visible when you're up there. And the left arm of Leaf Man actually points toward the first parcel of land there. So we added that in there. And we cleaned up his memorial. We added some new signage in there. So we hope, you know, believe the family will be pleased with what's going on. And it's just, it's a wonderful place up there to be and to look at quiet places. It's amazing. It's a quiet place. It overlooks our first parcel of land. And it also celebrates an area that's important to us and a couple of people that are very important to us. And it's done usually at the concert series, as well as anytime people, if it's open and people go up there and just relax and enjoy and get away from us. So that's all the family photos I have. Like any family, you can meet my kids when I show you the pictures, but until you actually meet them, you don't really know them. So I didn't ask you to come out to see this. So Friday, Saturday at A.B. Williams Woods, and then the 19th at Stinchco Memorial will be dedicating all this. Any questions?
That is the last bit of information and briefing items that we have. Next regular scheduled meeting is July 27th. If you haven't got your centennial tickets, please do so or get some of them.
Yeah, motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
You there? Okay.